And I'm sure Muffy will come in every once in a while, so I'll have to smack her. This is Olivia Brown. It is October 1st, 2016. I am interviewing Donna Roper for USC's Public History Program Archive, and we're conducting this interview at Ms. Roper's home in Piedmont, South Carolina. And Muffy has commented. Well, so I wanted to get started maybe just by getting a little of your personal background. Where are you from originally?
Okay, I'm from Piedmont. This is where I grew up. This house is a mill house in the mill village, because Piedmont's address goes over like two or three counties, and people say they're from Piedmont, but they aren't really, but I am. And this was my grandparents' house, and they bought it for $2,500 in 1950 from the mill. So I have enjoyed having this little house, and you see I have heart pine flooring and cool stuff like that, so I enjoy my house. My father is a big history buff. He's the local historian fella. I said he didn't go to college, and he's been a more successful historian than I have. And so that's where I was interested in history from always, I guess.
So where did you do your undergrad, and how did that affect going to graduate school afterward?
Well, that's very related to our program, because Walter Edgar was my undergraduate advisor. And when I was a senior, I was thinking, oh my Lord, I changed majors three times. I started out as an English major. And then I was ended up with just a regular history degree was what I was going to get. And I said, I don't want to teach. I got out of education. I don't know what to do with myself. And Dr. Edgar says, I think you might be interested in this new program that we've just started. And this was in 1975, and they were having the first class, the first year of the what was then applied history. So I went straight, stayed down there and went to graduate school, and started graduate school in the fall of 76.
So you're one of the first classes in the applied history program.
If I had graduated when I should have, I would have been in the second class. And I don't know how much you've heard about the early years of the program, but and I know you know it was applied history at the time, because there wasn't really anything such as public history at the time, too. The first, I don't know how many classes of us, we got jobs before we finished our degrees, because nobody was trained specifically for the public history jobs. So, and we had an internship as part of our program. You still do, don't you?
We do.
Yeah.
Yes.
And just about the entire first several years got hired by who they interned with, including me. And since we were, you can tell me this too, did they still want you to take comprehensive exams, intern full-time somewhere, and write your thesis in the same semester?
We don't, as master's students, take our comprehensive exams. That's now for only PhD students.
Okay.
But we do still have the internship and the thesis, and we now have a portfolio as well, and that's all before graduating.
Well, of the first class that graduated, one person graduated. The others had jobs, but no degree, because it was very difficult to work full-time, usually away from Columbia, and study and take your comps and develop and write your thesis all in one semester. And then we got hired, so that took all our time working. So hardly anyone, Julie Burr was the girl's name. She was hyper, and she's the only person that of the first bunch that graduated when she was supposed to.
So how long did it typically take people to finish
years,
their degrees?
Years. Some people never did, still worked in the field. And it took, I don't know if you realize that I was that old because my degree's 89.
It should have been started in 76.
It should have been 78. So it was 11 years later.
So how did that long span of time work with your degree? Were you just working full time, or do you want to tell me a little about that?
Well, I interned for the Pendleton District Commission, and which still exists, and they hired me a few months after I got home, and I hadn't finished my thesis yet. I had taken comps and finished all my work and done my internship, but I hadn't finished my thesis because the thesis that I was originally going to do didn't work out, and so I had to change it, so it put me behind, and then I got hired. So I merrily went on my way working in the field like everybody else from the early years of the program. And then my father was always upset with me because he sent me to graduate school and I didn't finish. So I decided, and I don't know if you ever knew Mary Edmonds. No, no, you wouldn't. You're new. She retired 2 or 3 years ago from the archives. She was like second in command in the chapeau and all at the archives. And her husband's Marion Edmonds. He still works for PRT. Anyhow, Mary and Marion were in my class. And Mary had just finished her, like 87 or 88 right then. And they didn't give her a problem about it. Well, when I contacted, and said, I would like to finish, because all I have left is my thesis and I just never have finished it, the graduate committee said no, I'd been out too long. And since Dr. Edgar is a perfectly wonderful human being, he went to bat for me and talked him into it. But they made me take two courses that weren't offered when I was, the early years there was no track. You took a little bit of everything. And they made me take two courses, I can't remember what one of them even was, and retake comps and finish my thesis. And they gave me a year to do it, and I was working. So that was even worse than the one semester that I had suffered through before with not getting out. But my office was very nice about it. My boss said I could go to Columbia one day a week, other than the week, and take a class, because I had to go to to the class. So they had those on the same day. One of them, we thought it was funny. It was, I can't remember the title of the class, but Connie Schultz taught it, and it was like a basic class. I'd worked in the field since 1978. Said, no, this is stupid, but I ought to make an A in it, and I did. But so I did all that stuff and finished my thesis and got my degree in December of 89. Yahoo,
After working that many years, still in the field already.
Yeah. So the worst part of it was retaking comps. And there was a fella that was a little bit younger than me, but that was also behind, and he had to retake comps, and we had them the same day. So we were in there going,
but stressing out together, right?
Yeah. And he'd worked at the archives all these years. But it was funny, that's what happened to me. I spent my entire career with the same office. A lot of the people that I went to graduate school with also did. That was very common for the first few batches of us. Unless you wanted to move around. I always wanted to work in local history, and so that worked out fine for me. I was somewhere that I enjoyed the work, and we all knew we weren't likely to get rich in this, liberal arts major, history major, unless we went to law school. A lot of the history majors did. Seemed like all the history majors that I knew as an undergraduate either went to work in a jewelry store or they went to law school. I knew them, several people that clerked in jewelry stores after we got our undergraduate degrees. I thought that was peculiar.
Interesting trend.
Yeah. I don't know how, what explained that, but it was seemed to be true. And then I didn't want to go, I believe in lawyers closest to the fire, so I wasn't real wild about the idea of going to law school. So I was extremely glad Dr. Egger had that bright idea of the Applied History program. Have you met him?
I have not, no.
You know who he is, I'm sure.
Yeah, I do.
Yeah.
So, do you remember some of the classes that you took before this gap where you worked in the field? Some of the classes that you took in those first year of, of your program, and maybe some that were memorable to you?
Oh, sure. One of the fun things was the historic preservation class that Dr. Egger taught. We met in the dome of McKissick, where the university board used to meet, and we looked out on the horseshoe from, you know, up there in class, and that was neat. I liked to be in where the class was, and of course Dr. Egger was a really good professor too, and so I remember a lot. I remember that class, and I enjoyed editing, which Dr. Rogers, who's passed away now. He was a really interesting professor, and he taught that, and that was fun to read letters from back. I'd never done that until I was in graduate school. Was to get, I loved the Caroliniana. I thought it was my house, you know, and I was in there so much. They have such treasures of things, and Alan Stokes, who still volunteers there, I think, and he did at least last year he was still volunteering. He used to be director of it, and Henry Fulmer, that's there now, worked for Alan. So I knew them, and the people in the Caroliniana were my friends, and I loved them. I still do. And so I enjoyed going to the Caroliniana and doing research. The only thing was, the upstairs was the you know, books and published things, and the downstairs was the, you know, they're redoing it. I don't know what it's like going to be like now, but the downstairs was the manuscripts division, and I didn't have to go to the upstairs nearly as much because I worked with all the primary sources, but I did sometimes, and the I was scared of the people on the second floor. They were mean, especially one little lady whose name I can't remember, which is probably fortunate, but since I'd probably say something about her, but I will say something about her. She was mean, and I didn't like to have to ask her for anything, and so I was so comfortable down in the manuscript room with the people that worked in there, and Alan was the, Stokes was the manuscripts librarian at that time and not the director, and then he was the director, and Henry was the manuscripts librarian. Now Henry's the director. So, and they're all wonderful people, but I didn't like to go up to the publications part.
Not unless you had to.
Not unless I had to. Yeah.
You mentioned that you had to switch thesis topics.
Yeah.
Why did that happen?
Well, when they sent you to intern, they usually asked the whoever was in charge of what it, wherever you went, if they had any project they would like to do for, would like you to do that would be suitable for a thesis. And the fellow that was the director at Pendleton said that he did, and it turned out he didn't. he was a former newspaper reporter and columnist, and this was a fellow that was, this fellow that he'd worked with way back that wrote a column all the time about local stuff and local history. And he had this notebook where he took notes that he used for his column. And all it was he read the old newspapers mostly, and it would have, you know, you knew what newspaper it was because it was Anderson whatever, and then it would, he'd write the date and scribble in notes about what that article that he read, and then it was entries like that. What in the heck could you do with that? So it was editing the T. Franklin Acker notebook was what I was supposed to be doing for my thesis, but when I saw that, I thought, whoopee, these are this man's notes for ideas for his little columns, And it's interesting, but all I think I can do with all these little one paragraph notes is look them up in the original article in the newspaper on microfilm at the time, you know, and what would I do with it? It was so many little things, it wouldn't, anyhow, I talked about it with Dr. Egger and it didn't work. So I ended up doing, and I actually changed twice because when I went back in 89, I was going to do a transcription of a journal that we had in our collection. It was it's been published since then, but I didn't do it. Well, I did the original transcription, but anyhow, that doesn't matter. It was the Anderson mayor's daughter from 1865. So there weren't many upcountry things like that. So, and that turned out to be more than I could get done in my year with all the other stuff I was doing. So I ended up doing a study of four farmer societies because Pendleton has one and I did two upcountry and two lowcountry farmer societies, and that study ended up being my thesis.
Did most of your resources come from USC, from the Carolinian, or did you do a lot of traveling?
No, we didn't do a lot of traveling. Not then. You do a lot more now. No, most of, Clemson and Pendleton, where I worked, and their collections, Bishop collections at Clemson had some stuff, and we had some stuff at Pendleton, and then the rest of it I got from the Carolinian. So the two lowcountry ones, farmer societies, agricultural clubs, whatever. That's when I was reading the correspondence with James Henry Hammond and Thomas Jefferson that I was talking about a while ago. So, no, we didn't get to travel a whole lot. One of the things that was very interesting and a lot of fun when I was in graduate school was we went to Old Salem and spent like two or three nights and studied decorative arts and all this stuff, and of course ate good food and yahooed at night and all this. It was fun, and it was really fun because we were in like Mesda, you know, and you know how you go through stuff and you can't go past the rope with the actual stuff, the actual artifacts and things, and we got to roll around on the floor and look at marks underneath the tables and pick up the furniture, the chairs, and look under. You know, we got to actually handle stuff and study real things and all that. So that was a really interesting trip.
Was that part of a class that you were taking?
Yeah, but I can't remember what class it was.
So you went with other applied history students to,
yeah, the
to
whole,
do that?
I think our entire, there was a bunch of us. We all went.
That sounds fun.
Yeah, it was. It was very interesting and a lot of fun. So that was a highlight of school. That and the editing and sitting in the boardroom in the Dome of McKissick for class and that kind of stuff. And then, you know, we had to have I guess you still do, we had to have a field of study and secondary to our applied history classes. And mine was the middle period of American history, so some of those classes were had interesting professors. One of them married one of my fellow students. He's dead now, the rascal, but she's still, her name's Barbara Bellows. You ever heard of her?
I haven't.
She writes stuff. She's good. And she was really nice. She was way too nice for Dr. Connolly. But let me see here, say bad things about people. But he was an interesting professor. I never forget, I took Civil War and Reconstruction class. And the first day of class, he's going down the list and calling us by name so he can see who we are. And he says, Edmund Kirby Smith. And everybody in the class said, you know, what? And he looked up and said, really? And Kirby Smith says, yeah, great-grandson. So I'm sure you know who that is from, yeah, the for Virginia. So one of his descendants was in my class
with he was in the applied history, not just in the Civil War and Reconstruction class.
So he was taking the program.
He was in the program. He's one of the ones that I don't think ever finished. He was a real character. But everybody called him Kirby Smith, not Ed or something. It's Kirby Smith. Hey, Kirby Smith. You know, this kind of stuff. So that was interesting to be sitting in the Civil War and Reconstruction class and have one of the general's descendants be on the roll. And Dr. Connolly thought it was pretty interesting, too. But he was an interesting professor, and I enjoyed taking his classes, but he was not a fair professor. Hmm. He was the professor that gave me my comprehensive exam questions for my secondary thing, my American history part. And when I went to see him for advice about what to bone up on, he says, "Now I want you to realize that even though the only thing I taught you was Civil War and Reconstruction, that we're going to have, that's not going to be just what the questions I'm going to give you are about." He said, like Jacksonian democracy, which I'd never studied direct, you know, in any kind of depth, and blah this and blah that. And so I panicked and checked out books on Jacksonian democracy and read up and all that. When I got to the exam, he gave you 9 questions. Pick 3 to answer. Any 3, and 6 of them were Civil War related.
So you had a pretty good choice of the Civil War questions.
So he lied. You know, you could have not boned up on any of the other stuff, and there was no Jacksonian democracy questions, and you could pick 3 Civil War questions, just like he said you weren't going to be able to. So I didn't think much of that. And then when I was in, later after I was working, I heard that there was a student that I knew that was a really nice woman, and he didn't, and as the old people say, he took against her, and he gave her unfair grades and almost got her flunked out of the program, which was basically just him, not her work, I'm positive. So you had professors that were wonky like that, even though he was very well known. You know, he wrote, a biography of a study of Robert E. Lee and a whole bunch of other stuff. And I said he was an interesting lecturer, but he was crazy. I still don't understand why Barbara married him. But because she wasn't crazy. She was real nice.
Are there other professors stick out to you that you remember?
Dr. Rogers, George Rogers. He was very interesting. My mother has never gotten over meeting him. He was very dapper and old South manners and all this stuff, and so smart. And anyhow, mother and daddy were visiting me, and we ran in. And mother was with me in the Russell House doing something, and we ran into Dr. Rogers. And stopped, and I said, "This is my, you know, I'm introduced mother to him," and he took her hand and bent over it and kissed her hand when he met her, and I thought mother was going to just kill over, and she always talked about that nice Dr. Rogers, so that was kind of funny. Then I never had this professor as a for a class, Dr. Lumpkin. Always tickled me if you ran into him in the hallway and stopped and said hello to him. He stopped dead still, put his heels together, and bowed to you when he told you hello. So that was funny, too. I enjoyed John Bryan. He was in the, he taught the 19th century architecture class I taught. He's more of an art history professor. I think he's still around, too. I know it's, not only are most of the professors either retired or dead, all of us that were in the first few years of the program are retiring now. So that's kind of funny to think of. Yeah, what else about the classes? I don't know. I remember the trip to Old Salem fondly, because that was so interesting. We got to do all that hands-on stuff.
And I like 19th century architecture that Dr. Bryan taught. That was fun. Did some work on the 19th, not just architecture as in houses, but in like infrastructure for like the waterworks and things like that. That was interesting. And I don't know. Have another question?
Yeah, absolutely. You mentioned how you got your job out of your internship. Yeah. What was your internship doing with the Pendleton District Commission?
They didn't have an curator. They had a like a secretary who was, and I don't know what the other woman's title was, but she did stuff like tours and the festival. She started the festival they have and that kind of, she did more tourism stuff. But they had were developing a pretty good collection of papers and artifacts and things, and they had started a little agricultural museum and things like that. So I processed collections, basically. Worked up little exhibits for the downstairs and of the building. It's an old two-story 1850 general store building. Worked with our director on some stuff over at the agricultural museum, and kind of tried to get them caught up a little bit with knowing what they had in their collections, because they some of the stuff I still don't know to this day, and my successors don't either, where the stuff came from, because our director did not keep records. He should have, but he didn't. And so we don't know where, who gave what and where it came from and anything about some of it. But so that's the kind of stuff I did. I did a little tourist type thing too, but mostly trying to get a start on processing the collections. And they really needed a curator, so when the secretary quit, I was hired as the curator with the secretary's minuscule salary. But, you know.
So is that the job that you stayed in after when they offered it to you?
Mm-hmm. And I was... I changed my title every once in a while, but I basically was the curator for 26 and something point whatever years. And we developed a really good archives and local history collection. And I never got to do a whole lot with the Ag Museum. They've done a lot with that over there with this last curator that they have now. He's developed the Ag Museum with a volunteer that, and several new volunteers, but with a lady that was really a retired school teacher that was really interested in it. And so I'm glad the Ag Museum finally got some love. But I enjoyed doing things, you know, like going to look at stuff people wanted to give us and see if we wanted it or not, and got to meet interesting people doing that, and walk around, you know, on their property and some of the old houses and things like that, and they'd give us, we had objects too, but I worked more with paper, you know, things, and that was all. I've always liked to read other people's letters, yeah. So that was fun to, and I like to make lists and, you know, organize. Not that you can tell from my house, but so I enjoyed getting family papers and going through and cataloging them and inventorying them and putting them in our research room so people could actually use them, and keeping an index of them before computers and a card file and stuff like that. I wish I had had computer capabilities my entire career. It would have been better and easier, and I'd have better records than I do now.
Do you remember when you started using computers to do that?
I can't remember when we first got one. No, I really can't.
I like computers.
But it made your life easier, right?
It made the newsletter a whole lot easier because I wrote the newsletter and put it out. So we used, you know, I used to have to type it and make it fit and cut and paste it, literally, not cut and paste on the computer program, and then run the copies off on the copier, Lord, and that kind of thing. And I got to do like quarterly or so exhibits out of our material, photos and different things on different local history topics, and they would be in the, and I got to do, they'd be in the downstairs of the building, the second floor is where the archive stuff stored, and the, I did tour guiding of historic Pendleton, like on buses and vans and on foot and walking tours and school tours and all that. I have to say, though, when I retired, I said my favorite thing about retired was I never had to do anything with a school group again.
Not your favorite part of your
job? Not my favorite part of it. Some of them, the homeschool groups were so polite and so well behaved, but if you got teachers that were just glad to be outside just as much as the students were, and you'd have like three school buses full running wildly through the Ag Museum or climbing on the stuff, and you were the only person there, kind of like, ah! So that was not all that much fun. Sometimes the walking tours were kind of fun for that. I used to, that was when like Nightmare on Elm Street was popular, the horror movie, and we had an Elm Street in Pendleton. When we'd get down behind St. Paul's Church and go down, I'd say, all right, we're going to have history on Elm Street, and this kind of thing. My favorite historic site is St. Paul's Episcopal Church, so I was always glad to get to go in because we had a key at the time because we did so many tours. So did that, it was a small office. I think one of the best things about where I worked was that you got to do everything, even stuff you didn't particularly want to do. But it was always interesting because it was not boring. You didn't sit and do one thing all day long.
That's nice.
Yeah, that was small history. And I always wanted to work in local history, so I was glad to get hired somewhere that was mostly local. There's Pickens, Oconee, and Anderson counties, and I'm in the edge of Anderson County. So it was local history for me, so that was good.
Any of those exhibitions that you designed that were your favorites, you remember?
No, they all run together. I mean, I did like three or four a year for 26 years. And sometimes we had like a grant to do one. We got a lot of humanities grants, state level humanities grants to do different programs, which was fun. We did one thing that was, which would be also so much easier now, being doing what's it called? You know, like slides on the computer.
PowerPoint.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Because we did coordinated slide shows. We had like a two slide projectors that were timed, and they would, one would fade in and one would fade out. You know, and you had to cue it all in and time it, put the timing in, and do the slide. You had to do it from scratch, and that was fun. That one of those was a local history, three county history level stuff that we did different slideshows on different topics like education through the years, you know, blah through the years, whatever. And we got a lot of people to come see those too, so that when we presented them, so that was fun. And we did a couple of Black History projects that we got grant help with, and had an outside scholar come in too, so I didn't do all of that exhibit and programs and stuff by myself, but that was really interesting, and we had a couple of really good exhibits. Have you ever heard of Jane Hunter?
I have not.
Jane E. Hunter was born at Woodburn in Pendleton, and she started the Phyllis Wheatley Association, and
She went to Chicago, and anyhow, she's a very interesting woman, and she's from Pendleton, and there's a lot of she's in the several Hall of Fame, halls of fame, and stuff like that, and she was always interesting, and we did an exhibit about her, and those kind of exhibits too, the school groups like. We have a whole bunch of, we send out a lot of information to schools and teachers and, you know, different, and senior citizens groups are a whole other category of the doing programs and for senior citizens groups was sometimes wilder than the elementary school children. I call the children urchins. I call all children urchins. I don't have any children. And everybody always knows I call them urchins. I don't mean anything bad by it. And one of my coworkers referred to the senior citizens groups as senior urchins because they were harder to make behave than the children were. So, you know, like I said, it was always interesting. We might be over at some so-and-so's farm looking at a piece of farm equipment for the Ag Museum, or we might be at somebody's house getting an oral history. We did several oral history projects, which were also grant supported, and we still have, we had one particular one that was one particular interview from one of the projects that was I've forgotten the name of the program, some national Smithsonian thing about American dialects. I don't even know how they found us. Has one of our tapes. We had, at the time, our office also owned Stump House Tunnel Park in Oconee County, and our ranger that ran the little park for us, well, that's an old railroad project that didn't make it. It tunneled through partway through the mountain, and it didn't get finished, so it's like a great big tunnel that Clemson used to cure their blue cheese in it. And anyhow, it's been a tour. I went there when I was a little girl. It's fun. When you go to the mouth of the great big tunnel, it's like air conditioning coming out of it, because we'd go up there in the summers for picnics. And if it was hot, you just went up and stood in the tunnel, because it's 50 degrees year-round in the tunnel, which is why they cured blue cheese in it. Because of the,
probably nice when it's 100 degrees.
It was wonderful.
Here, right?
But anyhow, I know I had a point. What was it? About stuff. Oh, our ranger. One of our oral history interviews was with Mr. Ridley, and he was from Walhalla, around Walhalla, and he was an old mountain man, and he had this way of talking that was really old-fashioned dialect, mountain dialect, and he'd never seen the ocean, never been like more than 50 miles away from home. Real smart, very interesting. Lots of fun to talk to. And he was one of the, and he used to moonshine. And we have him on in the oral history tapes telling us step by step how you made moonshine. And his tape is in that Smithsonian American dialect collection, which was cool.
Yeah. Were you part of these grant writing proposals? You want to talk a little about how you found these grants, or what writing them was like, and that experience of working with state grants?
Yeah. We had occasionally one, like from the archives or somebody, to do National Register nominations, that sort of thing. We did a few of those under a grant program. But the ones we had the most were, I think we had a AASLH grant doing something one time. Can't remember what it was now. But we did most of our grant work through the South Carolina Humanities Office. And I don't know, my boss was real good at finding money. He was real good at spending it too, but he was real good at looking for grant stuff. And of course, we learned that in graduate school too, you know. So I was aware that we had grant writing and that sort of thing we were taught in the graduate program, so that's how we knew about it. But the grant writing wasn't as difficult as it is now, because there was a lot more federal and state money available. You know, it's hard to get they had brick and what, you know, the brick and mortar money from the archives, which, yeah, not much now, but we usually did, and the humanities one had always had a public presentation as part of, it had to be part of your grant, so that's, and that was good at getting the programs out to the public. It was interesting, all of the, when we had public programs, which we did a lot of public programming, not just the, you know, going to, when people ask us to go to their club or their class or whatever and do a program on something other, local history, we also would have the ones where we just publicized it and whoever came. The most people that came were the transplants. Because, you know, up around Clemson and the lakes and all, we have a lot of people that aren't from South Carolina. And they're always extremely interested in local history. The local people took it for granted more than the transplants did. So that was interesting to find out. I don't know, what was the original question? Did I answer it?
Oh, yeah. You answered it. Don't worry. So you talked about learning this grant writing in your graduate school. What other skills did you learn that you found were really important to your career afterward?
Being trained on how to catalog and how to document historic buildings from the historic preservation class, and because we had to do that. We had National Register nominations and National Register. We were in a National Register Historic District. There was more around the three-county area and all that kind of thing. And how to do research correctly, even though I'd been a history major as an undergraduate. The importance of primary sources and the fun of primary sources. And the difference in that and a secondary source, I don't think a lot of kids know what that is now. I don't mean in graduate school, but, you know, like you look it up in the encyclopedia and that's your paper, and no, you know. So, I don't know, some of that. And also, sort of public relations, how to talk to donors of stuff, not money necessarily, but, you know, how to behave with that sort of thing, so you'd be more likely to get the donation of whatever it is you're wanting, and how to tell them no nicely if it was something that you didn't want that they thought was wonderful, you know, and that kind of thing. So
good.
That was interesting.
Did you ever get any valuable advice before you started graduate school that you can remember, maybe from Dr. Edgar or someone else?
I can't think of any actual advice. Dr. Edgar gave me something to do besides teach, which I didn't want to do, or clerk in the jewelry store. But I really can't remember.
Maybe his advice was, go into this program.
Yeah, well, basically it was. I think I've solved your problem for you. Go into my new program, which was wonderful. Yeah, that was good advice. But no, I can't remember. I really can't remember any advice.
Would you have any for any new graduate students?
I don't know. I can't think of any. I probably should have.
That's okay. Not a problem. What about some challenges that you faced while you were in the graduate program?
Well, time. That the well, my roommates were pharmacy majors as an undergraduate, and we still all roomed together when I was in graduate school, because they were in like PharmD program, so they were still there too, so that was kind of interesting. At least our first year, we were all still of graduate school, we were still all together, and they used to laugh at or get mad at me because they would be sitting up in the middle of the night in the floor doing flashcards on organic chemistry stuff, and I'd be slumbering peacefully because I was a liberal arts major, and
wake me up at 1 a.m. while they're still up studying to tell me that I know my quilts were a benzene ring pattern. And they didn't think I had to work near hard as they did. So when I got in graduate school, it was a step up from undergraduate studies. And it was more studying, and my roommates and suitemates thought that was just perfectly wonderful that I actually had to spend a lot of time working on my graduate work, because they didn't think I had spent near enough time when I was an undergraduate. So I'm sure it was easier than what they were doing. I didn't know any organic chemistry except about my quilt being a benzene ring pattern. But anyhow, that quilt's still in there in the bedroom, by the way. But my grandmother made it. But but I adjusted to that pretty well. I enjoyed I enjoy taking classes in anything that's interesting to me, which a lot of stuff is. So that was fine. But the biggest thing I had was that last semester, like I said, where you were supposed to do all of that in one semester when you weren't even in Columbia or at home base, or, you know, so to speak. So, and that was proved to be too difficult for me to do in one semester. Like I said, I didn't feel too bad because everybody else, just except for Julie Burr, had the same problem, and none of us finished on time. But yeah, that I guess that would be the biggest pressure. The two biggest things was having to adjust my work level upwards and trying to finish on time and not being able to.
But you felt that the transition from undergraduate to graduate school was easy to take at certain parts, or was it pretty difficult?
I don't think it was difficult. It was noticeable. It was a noticeable difference in level of work. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
But
you could tell that you were doing more work when you went to graduate school.
Definitely.
Do you still keep in touch with anybody from the program, any of the faculty or your fellow students?
Well, I still talk to Dr. Edgar every once in a blue moon. And I'm trying to think. I haven't talked to any of the... I used to, when I worked, I went to two statewide conferences every year. So all the time I worked, I saw my colleagues from school. And so when I quit doing that, I don't stay in touch with them much anymore. But I used to see them and talk to them at the conferences, and we'd compare notes on where we were working, which was usually wherever we had landed as an intern, and that kind of thing. It was so interesting, the Mary Edmonds that I mentioned that was at the archives for a long, long time and then retired. She had taught elementary school before she went back to graduate school, and then worked in the archives all those years. When she retired at the archives, she went back to teach in third grade, which I thought was interesting. I still stay in touch with a couple of colleagues that worked at different places. They weren't necessarily in my graduate program, but I wouldn't have known them if I hadn't been in that graduate program, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, so you met them through your work.
Yeah, I met them through work, or through when I was already a student. They were already working somewhere, so I still keep in touch with two or three of those. We, scattered.
People moved all over the place.
Yeah. We may have stayed in the same job, but we weren't all in the same county or state or even.
How was the applied history program viewed within the larger history department?
At the time?
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. I don't really know what the professors thought, but we got grief from the regular history graduate students. They looked down on us.
In what way?
They said so. I would be like in the graduate student lounge or something, and they'd make snitty comments. I can't remember. One guy that was just really sneery about the whole program, because I remember we were talking, I can't remember what we were talking about. It was some kind of something we were studying or working on or something. And he says, and of course, you're an applied history student, so you have no idea, you know, and this kind of thing. And I thought that was ridiculous. So in the earlier years, some of the regular history graduate students didn't like us. I don't know how that changed. Do you have any idea? Is it?
I think it has changed.
I would think it has.
Seems a little more cohesive now.
Well, it's more of there's more programs like that. I mean, there were no programs like that. And that's why we all got jobs so fast. There was nobody training you to do this sort of thing at the time. And of course, it became, I think, a very successful program, and that probably changed attitudes too.
How did that division affect yours and your colleagues' situation within the applied history program?
People I knew were happy to be in our program, and I certainly enjoyed it and benefited from it. And I don't know, some of the I think they thought they were more academic than we were. After all, we would be working with the public, and they would be writing important papers for a journal that no one but the other students read. If you know what I mean?
I understand what you're saying.
I don't know if they felt threatened, since this was more public-oriented, or if they just looked down their noses because they thought we weren't intellectual and academic enough. Like it was the easier choice than just going for a straight master's degree and on for a PhD and all that kind of stuff. I don't know. I thought that was stupid, but that's what I remember in the early years.
What were some of your major takeaways from your master's education? I know it expanded over a number of years, but when you reflect back on that, what do you think of most?
How much I enjoyed learning, being thankful I didn't have to teach. I have great admiration for teachers, but I don't think I could have done it. I don't know what to tell you. I've recommended it to a lot of people. Some of them went to the program. I had a better appreciation for how you can affect how the public perceives history.
Mm-hmm. That was something that you... Mm-hmm. That you learned while you were in your graduate program.
Mm-hmm.
Great. What motivated you to volunteer to be interviewed for this project that we're doing?
I just thought it sounded interesting, and I'm not sure, wasn't sure how many of us oldies you would get. Because I know, I didn't know if you realized how old I was, because you have my, you know, graduation date down is 89, but it actually should have been 78, so that makes me a good bit older. And didn't know, it just seemed like it would be interesting and kind of fun, and I wasn't thinking I was going to say anything profound or anything, but just that it would be interesting to do. I still contribute to the program, and I'm still interested. I still stay interested in it, and usually if I get something I'm on the Apple grad, you know, email list and that kind of stuff, and so I try to keep up.
So this was a good way to do that.
Yeah.
To some extent.
Yeah.
What kind of perspective do you think being from one of these first classes is able to offer?
I don't really know. I think it shows you how much the program has probably improved.
by diversifying, I guess would be a good word for it, because like I said, we didn't have tracks when we started. So I think that was a real good idea to, so you could concentrate more than if you wanted to work for a museum or work at the archives or whatever, you know, work with a historic house museum, whatever you wanted to do, you could concentrate more on learning how to do that than just having it all thrown at you at once. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Looking back at your graduate program, are there other improvements that you would have wished to be put in place over time? Things that...
Not having to do everything in one semester to graduate. That was the biggest problem I knew of in the early years of it, was nobody graduated. We all got jobs, so it was successful, but no one graduated on time. I'm not sure when that started to change.
I'll have to see based on some of the other interviews that we get.
Interviews, I would love to know when that started to change, when you got more people graduating from the program on time or in a reasonable amount of time than you did with us. Like I said, some of us never graduated at all. And some did. I'm not sure how many people went on to get PhDs either, especially as opposed to regular academic, regular master's degree students.
Was that a possibility while you were in graduate school to continue after the master's and go to the PhD at USC?
Sure.
Did people in your program do that? Or
I'm not sure who did and who didn't. That's what I was saying. I have really not thought about that a lot, mm-hmm. but I can't think of very many people, especially from my age group, that went on and got doctorates. And I don't think it was one of the, I don't think it was available as one of the PhD fields of study at the time either.
Interesting.
I'm not sure, but I'm pretty sure it became
and it's relatively popular now for some of our PhD students to take on a master's in public history as one of their minor fields.
Mm-hmm. And the I know you could, I like the idea of the interdisciplinary, the unit, you know, where you could get a master's of library science with this, mm-hmm. with
the dual program.
Yeah, the dual programs, that stuff. That's a good idea.
Yeah, that seems to be more popular now.
I'm sure it was.
Well.
That would have been kind of, I think that I would might have liked that. I don't think you could do that when I was there, because I love libraries. That was interesting to learn, too, that libraries, in my mind, you know, are sacred temples of books and this kind of thing. And I was kind of surprised to find out that they didn't see things like the public history students did. They might get rid of a book that I wouldn't get rid of. I mean, it was not a rare book section, but, you know, just a regular library that it's not the same emphasis.
Interesting.
Which didn't fit in my brain. I know I like to go to, you know, used book sales and used book dealers and all that kind of stuff. And I'm trying to think where I was. A friend of mine and I were at a used book sale, and there were like two or three dozen of these books from like the way old, and they were they were identified as like coming from the South Carolina College. I mean, that's old, as far as University of South Carolina. And they had like names written in them. And I thought it was really interesting to me. And I thought, what are these doing in a used book sale? Wouldn't the library want to keep the things that were that old, that were like to have the encapsulated South Carolina College library? All the books, because it wasn't that many at the time, I wouldn't think. That's way back in, you know, when it was
like 1830 or 40 or something, wouldn't you
it
think?
It became South Carolina, or it was South Carolina College up until the Civil War.
Yeah.
So it's a book with that stamp would have been pre-Civil War.
Like book plates, not really stamps, you know, and some interesting people, I can't remember who now, names, you know, written in them and this kind of stuff. And I thought, why would you get rid of these? Because I remember calling the Carolinian and asking Alan if, I said, they said the library got rid of them. It's why they're in this book sale. I said, does that sound likely to you? Or do you think that could be stolen? Or he checked for me, and no, the Carolinian didn't get rid of them. These were like from the big library. But it never made sense to me that they would get rid of those. So that was a different... I learned that librarians had a different way of looking at the treasures than I did. Anyhow, I've still got some of them. I bought some of them and kept them.
Oh, very
them.
Cool.
Yeah, thought it was.
Well, why don't we conclude a little by, how about, when did you retire? excuse me.
Certainly. I would not have retired as early as I did.
Sorry.
That's okay. You know that? I have a cough drop. Do you want one?
I'm
or
okay.
Or you just swallow your wrong?
Getting over a cold. Sorry about that.
That's okay.
Continue.
You want a Kleenex?
I'm okay. Okay. Thank you.
I have multiple sclerosis, and I got diagnosed in like 2000, and it's gotten, you know, it's a progressive thing. Mm-hmm. And I retired at the end of 2005. I was fortunate enough, you know, I was a state employee, so you only had to have 28 years, and I had like 26.3 or 4 years, and I was fortunate enough to have, because I didn't go out on disability, I was fortunate enough to have enough saved up to buy myself out and have my full retirement benefits. So it had gotten too much for me to work 5 days a week in a row all day long every day. So I looked up my finances and decided I could do this and live on my retirement. So I retired early.
Are you enjoying your retired life?
Of course. Instead, when you retire, you have 6 Saturdays and 1 Sunday every week.
Well, that sounds nice.
Yeah. Well, the... up until like a year and a half ago or so, I still volunteered at my old office, and their stuff's on the second floor, and they don't have an elevator, so
that's kind
of difficult. I've had a lot of trouble walking, and I gave up. I can't do that anymore, but mostly because of where the stuff is. But I also worked with the Anderson County Museum. Started as a division of our office in Pendleton, and I was their first curator and coordinated the little volunteers, and we had like a little suite of 3 rooms in the basement of the old courthouse, and you know, this kind of did the exhibits and coordinated the volunteers and all that, and worked with the historical groups, and so that was all. I've always been interested in that. And then about late 90s, finally got the county to take responsibility for it and hire a real their director, and you know, all this, and they ended up doing redoing the old library building when they built a new library and all this. Anyhow, it's a great museum, you should go, and it's all on one level. I still volunteer there.
Oh, great.
Yeah, the their little research room is named for me, the Roper Research Room.
That's nice.
Yeah, I thought it was. It's cool. And I volunteer there once a month, and I'm on their advisory board. But I work with them more than I do my old. Well, that's sort of my old office, too, because, like I said, my office was in charge of it before it got to be a good place, great place. If you ever get to go, you should go. It's a really good history museum.
Where is that?
It's in downtown Anderson on Fant Street. They have just great exhibits. They've been fortunate to have good curators once they got a
real, air quotes, museum going. Because it was a struggle in the early years with, I only went down there one afternoon a week, and anything I did for exhibits, I had to do it, fabricate it, Pendleton, and all that, you know. It's been really interesting over the years. Like I said, I wish we'd had computers earlier and digital photographs and all that. We copied a lot of photos for the collections, and we did it with a photo light stand. Those lights were incredibly hot. You could only do it for so long at the time with the camera screwed into the thing and different lens. And then you had to, I worked in the dark room and printed the pictures, you know, and that kind of stuff. So, boy, is it a lot easier now. It's easier to do everything with computers and digital and printers and all that stuff.
So, easier, but they come with their own challenges.
Yes, they do. But so I think I was fortunate I got to work in a lot of different, with a lot of, over a period of years where a lot of things changed, the way you did it and the equipment you used and what people were interested in, and just all of that changed over the years. And of course, I think I was extremely fortunate to get to work in a small place that had lots of different activity and not just work on one thing all the time. And if it hadn't been for the Applied History, Public History program, I would never have gotten to do all of this. So, yay.
Well, that's great. Yeah. I want to thank you so much for being willing to do this interview with us. And I'll be in touch with you about anything that we create out of it afterward.
Great.
Thank you.
Thank you.